All right, now we've been moving through Luke, and I want to jump right into this, and we're focusing now on that last major category, not last, but second to last major category, Jesus' authority. We've looked at the proclamation of who he is as a Messiah. We looked at prayer and the power of the Messiah, and then we looked at how these last incidents, and that will continue for a little while, are Jesus' preparation or to get the apostles prepared for the day when he's no longer going to be with them. He knows they're not getting it yet, but he knows that there's a point coming where physically, not spiritually, but physically he will be removed from them. And they're going to have to take that which they've learned in a few short years, about 3 years roughly in that area. And they're going to have to take all of these principles, these precepts, and they're going to have to take those things and they're going to have to put them into practice because Jesus is no longer going to be there for them to be able to reach out in a physical sense and touch him and receive comfort and strength and all of the other things that go with that. And when he leaves them here shortly with that, we're within just a couple of months from his destination, which of course was Golgotha, where the cross was at. And they needed to understand these things. They were slow to grasp the significance of the things that he was saying. But those things are the words that he spoke to them are the things that are going to get them through the tough times in the future. Okay, so as we've been moving through this, we looked last week at really the first part of this preparing these guys, and we saw in the first couple of verses there that he started to warn them to be on their guard against religion. Now we've said a million times here, I've told you a million times, so quit exaggerating, you get the idea. But anyway, we've said repeatedly, let me say it that way, that religion is not biblical. God is not interested, nor is he looking for people that are religious. Because religious is this attempt to work your way to God. The reality of it is the scripture teaches that we can do nothing to get to God. Christianity is not religious. It is God reaching to us. It's just the opposite. And so the problem that Jesus had all of the time, especially with the religious, was that he was trying to teach that you can't do anything for yourself. It doesn't matter what prayers you say. It doesn't matter where you meet. It doesn't matter how secure you are in your scriptures, your traditions, and your ceremonies. Those things don't matter. What matters is a personal relationship between you and God. And I've come to restore that relationship. And you're either going to accept that or you're not. And of course, we know the story. Obviously, they didn't accept him because they were the instigators behind putting him on the cross. So they rejected him. So this idea of religion, and so Jesus takes the time in that first part of chapter 12 we looked at to reveal to them the conflict that they're going to have with the religious. That continues to this day. Those that are religious don't like us that just have relationship. Because again, you say, well, there are no standards. Exactly. That's the point of a relationship. There are no standards. There are no lines drawn in the sand. There aren't. That's what a relationship is. If you start drawing lines and putting boundaries on some, you know, on this relationship that you have, what kind of relationship is that? Who wants that? So this reality of this intimacy that God desires between him and us, it just excludes religion. So Jesus was warning them about that. And then he talked about it was going to be the religious that was going to bring them into under persecution. The religious will take you, and they will beat you, and they will reject you, and they will mock you, and they will ridicule you, they will criticize you, condemn you, critique everything, all, you know, it just goes on and on. That's what religious does. And we constantly are hearing it, even to this day. Oh, you guys over there, you know, you can't be serious about God. I mean, you know, said 100 times, listen to the music that you play. It's not traditional, so it's not acceptable. You know, the clothes that you wear. Well, you shouldn't look like that when you're teaching. You know, you shouldn't sound like that. You shouldn't say dude when you're teaching. I try not to say dude. It just happens. I'm from San Diego. What can I say? But anyway, so that's all of the stuff that's going on. So Jesus has revealed the conflict that they're going to have with religion, and he says that the tribulation that you're going to suffer is going to come from religion. And then he gives them the confidence to recognize that he is in control of the situation, and even when that religion takes them before the magistrates, the authorities, whether they be political or whether they be religious, that don't worry about what you're going to say, because I will say what needs to be said. You just open your mouth and it'll all come out. That's one of the great confidences in teaching, And that's one of the reasons, after years and years of doing this, I learned to settle down, because I used to be, and I still get nervous being up here, but I used to really worry about how I was going to sound, how I was going to be perceived, until I got to the place. And it took me years and years to come to this place, and I'm still not even really there to realize that I can't say anything that's going to mean anything. So I just allow God to say what needs to be said. Try to stay out of his way. That's the key. So he said, look, when they're going to take you and they're going to bring you before these authorities, they're going to bring you before all of these people that have all of this authority, who feel like they can set in judgment of you. And I don't want you to worry about what you're going to say, because in that hour, in other words, as it's happening, I'm going to say what needs to be said through you. And there's great confidence in that, to know that if our heart is right and our trust is where it needs to be, that when we're under the gun and we speak, we're going to speak not from ourselves, but we're going to speak with the authority of God. And that's why man can never stand up to it. And that's why the religious will always try to kill that, to silence. Can't stop it, but it can silence. That's the attempt. So as we're moving through this, that's what was taking place last week. But when we come today, what we're going to look at now is we're going to try to get through verse 34. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but we're going to try. He turns their attention, because now there's another aspect of this that they need to worry about. Okay? And that is going to be about their personal wealth and the worry that they have as individuals. Now remember what's happening. We've just been talking about this. There's this huge crowd gathered. The religious are on the fringe, always looking and saying, how can he say that? I can't believe he's teaching these people that, rah, rah, rah. And they're always doing this. We got to get rid of this guy. We got to find a way to remove him, because otherwise he's going to take everybody away from us. He's going to become more popular than us. If he becomes more popular than us, he's going to be more powerful than us. And he's going to then take our positions. We can't allow that, so we must stop him. So they're always waiting to find something that he says, and they're always throwing out the challenges. But as he's doing this, he's turning and he's spending most of the time, we read last week, focused on the apostles and the disciples. Remember, the apostles are the 12. The disciples are the bigger group, okay, of those that are choosing to follow Jesus. So as he's speaking to them, the crowds are gathering. And last week we said they gathered so much that they were stepping on each other's feet. Remember that? That's what Luke wrote for us. And as the crowd begins to gather and Jesus does these things in this setting that we talked about last week, we're continuing on, because now look at the first word here. Then one from the crowd said to him, so this tells us this all happened sort of simultaneously, or sequentially, maybe is probably a better way to put it. Then one from the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Anybody see a problem with that? Right off the bat, it's like, what? And verse 14, and then verse 14, but he said to him, man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to them, listen, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Ooh, ouch. Wouldn't you say? Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, and we're going to look at the parable in a minute, so I'll stop right there. Now here's the first thing to notice. He's been speaking to the apostles and by extension the disciples, and everybody else that's gathered around is hearing these things. And he's been talking about how you're going to be ridiculed and mocked and beaten and taken and accused falsely by the religious. And then you're going to be taken to these people. And he's warning them and he's comforted them and saying, but don't worry about that. And in the midst of this great conversation, one person in the crowd, and I'm certain there were others, totally missed what he had just said. It's like when you're talking to one of your kids, you know, and you're trying to explain to them. Now listen, son, this is the way it is. You've got to do this in life. And he goes, you know, Dad, by the way, you know, the game's on at 7. It's like, what the crud? There's this total, this is what I get from this. Then one from the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance. And I'm saying, the Lord just looking at it going, seriously, man? Seriously, we're just talking about people who follow me being arrested and beaten and treated cruelly, and you're concerned about your inheritance? Are you not paying attention? Because you see, all this guy heard was the authorities. He didn't hear anything else that Jesus had said. He just said authorities. And he's thinking, aha! And he just completely misses everything that Jesus said, and he jumps in. And what he's saying to Jesus here is that, look, I'm understanding the fact that you're a rabbi. And if you're a rabbi, then you know Deuteronomy chapter 21. And Deuteronomy chapter 21 tells us how we're supposed to treat those that are in our family as far as passing off the inheritance. In other words, Jesus, you know the law. And since you brought authorities into this, let's not worry about all that persecution stuff. I don't even worry about that. Let's get me my inheritance here. You have the authority to do that. So you need to step up and tell my brother to give me what belongs to me. And we look at this and we just go, what? And I would reply with the same thing I always say. Go stand in front of a mirror. Because that's exactly what we do. He's told us. He's told us what a relationship with Him is like. And the only thing we can do is focus on the horizontal. Right? And we can always look at that person that said or the person that did. Isn't that the way that it really is? That's the reality of this. We know from God's Word what He expects of us, but we spend so much time looking beside us that we miss what He said from above. The vertical versus the horizontal. Teacher, tell my brother. What do you mean, tell your brother? I'm not the Lord. That's relatively plain, I would assume. But I would just say, seriously, dude, why don't you go tell your brother? Really? Well, he's bigger than I am. Hey, so, if your inheritance is so important, take a bigger stick. That's what I would tell him. But Jesus doesn't do this. But He also doesn't fall for it. There are lessons to be learned. His followers must understand, and He's not going to allow Himself to be distracted. And that's why He says, but He said to him, man. Now what's interesting is the word that's used here for man, anthropos. We get anthropology from it. And it means mankind as a whole, not an individual. So you see, what Jesus was really saying is that this is a problem with mankind as a whole. They don't pick up on the spiritual. They're only worried about the physical. But He's certainly addressing this to a man, but He's broadening the term. In other words, everybody falls into this category. Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? Well, isn't that what Jesus is? Didn't He say that He's going to sit on the throne of judgment? Yes, He did. But what's He going to judge? Our relationship with God. Not our relationship with others. He did not come to settle disputes between you and I or anyone else. That's not His purpose. Because first of all, if we settle our relationship with Him on that vertical, the horizontal will pretty much take care of itself, won't it? Absolutely. So He's looking, I'm not going to sit in a position of judgment on this, and I'm not going to settle this dispute between you and your brother. I'm not here for that purpose. You guys are going to have to work that out yourself. See, that was the attempt here, is to get him off. And he's having none of it. He's not going to be swayed and brought into petty family problems. And then verse 15. And he said to them, take heed. Beware of covetousness. Now last week, he talked about hypocrisy as being the yeast of religion. The religion has this thing that just gets in there and you can't see it because it's hidden, but it permeates everything. And it's this idea of religion that you're something that you're not. You're playing a part because religiously it feels good, it looks good to do so. It's interesting. But here, take heed and beware. And when Jesus says, take heed and beware, we should probably take heed and beware. Take heed. You better be alert. You better be paying attention. Because this idea of covetousness, which we wouldn't call greed, that's what it really means. In other words, desiring to have that which does not belong to you. There's even a program on TV that we can click and watch. It's called American Greed. Even the world has figured this out. What does that tell us? Take heed and beware. Be on your guard. Pay attention and watch. Stand fast against this concept of greed. Why? Because greed will flat out get you. Oh, well, they have a better car. They have a better house. Their golf clubs are nicer than mine. You know, you get the idea. They got all of this stuff, this person, other person. And all of a sudden, getting that which someone else has, not necessarily stealing now, okay, but the desire to keep up with the Joneses, I guess would be the way we would say it. Well, we've got to have a bigger house because the people sitting in my row at church have bigger houses. They drive nicer cars. My car's always broke down. I don't have that problem because I drive the beast. My truck's sitting out there. I get all the time, get rid of that thing, get something else. No. Can you see me driving something big and fancy? No, I fit that old beat up nasty looking thing out there. We go hand in hand. I'm cool with that. It would be nice to have air conditioning, but oh well. Take heed and beware of covetousness. Notice this. Here's the reason you need to beware and take heed. Because don't think for one second that life consists in the abundance of the things you have. Now, if we just took that out of this passage, that says a mountain full, doesn't it? Because the reality is, you and I that live in the year 2012 oftentimes think or equate the value or success in our life with that which we possess. And Jesus says, you are wrong. It means nothing. Trav and Liz are going to be going down to minister to people in Belize. We're going to be going to minister to people in Mozambique. Folks, these people have nothing compared to what we have. But their love for the Lord, you saw it with Pastor Gids. You saw it. His little tiny home, and then what they have done for Bernard, you see, that's a heart for God. Your life does not consist in the abundance of the things you possess. So then why are we always trying to acquire them? I just can't be happy unless I have fill in the blank. I'll just not be satisfied. So then Jesus goes on now with this parable. Then, key, tiny little word, but he's using this parable to illustrate what he has just said. Then he spoke a parable. Now a parable, parabole, a para means to come alongside, and to bale, we get ball from it, means to throw. So it's to throw something alongside of something else. In this case, it's a story. To throw alongside of a story. It comes alongside of this thing. So what he's going to do now, a parable, what it ultimately tells us is that he's going to teach a spiritual truth using a physical example. Okay? He wants their spirit to understand this. But he knows, and he knows you and I, that the best way he can do that is to use that which is in the physical to explain or express that which is in the spiritual. Because we can connect the dots there. If he talked all spiritual, all of us would be lost. We couldn't figure out what the crud he was talking about. So he does these parables to get it down to where we can understand it. That's the why he does that. I mean, he's the Lord. So he uses that. I love that about him. So he said that the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. Now what he's saying is there's this guy, we're going to see in a few minutes, this guy was a relatively young man, but he had all of this land. And remember, in their day, the more land you had, the richer you probably were. That was how wealth was described. They didn't have retirements and all that stuff, but here we're going to see what this guy's doing. So he had this land, but he had a lot of it. So he was pretty well off, basically. But notice what's happened to the land. It's not just producing. It's producing abundantly. It's exceeding his wildest expectations, the crop that is growing there, and the amount that he is able to harvest and bring in from this one field, as large as it is, has just blown. It's just moved him from, like our government would put him in that 250,000 range. You know, he's just moved from upper class to now way upper class. That's what he's talking about here. That's what it means. So the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. There was a bunch. And then notice what's happening here. And he thought within himself, saying, oh, now wait a second here. Man, this thing is bigger than I ever thought it could be. I got to do something about it. I got to take advantage of the situation. I got to do something. Now look at, you know, we always get accused of talking to ourselves. Here's a parable of a guy that's talking to himself through the whole dang thing. The problem is, while he's talking to himself, he isn't hearing God. Notice, and he thought within himself, saying, there's the problem. That's why I underlined it. Here's the problem. Himself. This is a self-centered, self-righteous, selfish individual. And it's going to cost him. Because the only thing he's focused on is the here and the now. So he has this conversation. He thought within himself saying, what shall I do since I have no more rooms? Man, I've got so much crop. I don't have the room to store all of this stuff. What am I going to do with this? I can't leave it out there. It's going to rot. So I've got to do something because if that happens, I lose my investment. Well, of course, then you come to verse 18. So, having reasoned with himself, ever had a conversation with yourself? My dad used to always go, so I said to myself, self. That's my dad. That's what he does. But anyway, so he said, listen, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. There I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, there it is. And I will say to my soul, soul, you've had many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? Wow, the job is going far better than I ever thought it would go. The provision here is just beyond comprehension. So I'm just going to take all of this and I'm going to store it on. I'm going to build my bank account up. That's how we would do it since there's not a whole lot of farmers in here. If you're a farmer, raise your hand. Yeah, that's what I thought. But that's how we would do it. Man, the return on this investment is just incredible. I had a little small account over here at this bank. I've got to open this massive account now and store this thing up. Now what's the problem with what's going on here? Verse 18. Verse 19. Bit of a pattern here, isn't there? This is all about this individual. His focus is entirely inward. And his only interest and concern is on what this means to him as an individual. Oh, he might send a small check or even a large check to a charity. I mean, after all, that's what all people that have a lot of money are supposed to do, right? I mean, that sounds nice. And that's a good thing. Don't misunderstand. But that's out of the excess. You see? So this guy's, it's just this I. And then he says, and I will say in verse 19, and I will say to my soul. The soul, the mind, the will, and the emotions, that inner part of us that makes us who we are, our thinker, our chooser, and our feeler. That which dictates everything we do. And then, of course, there's the body. The body doesn't have a mind and a will and emotions. It follows the mind, the thinker, the feeler, and the chooser. See? The problem is our thought process is warped. The thinker. Because we've received all of this input from a world that says, listen, the only thing that's important in this life is this life. Get what you can, man, while you're here. I've shared the story, he who dies with the most toys wins. We've seen it. We've all seen the bumper sticker on the cars. And then the one that followed that up that I just laughed myself out of the front seat. He who dies still dies. But that's the thing, see? We live in a society that tells us that our toys, our trinkets, and our time are those things that are of greatest value. What a lie. Those things are so quickly, or can be, so quickly removed from us that it's absolutely staggering. Again, we've talked about before, many of us, I would assume, have been affected by this economy. And what you thought you could count on in your later years is either not available any longer, or if it is available, it isn't available to the extent that you assumed that it would be available. So Walmart greeters has 1,000 applications in, right? I mean, that's what's happened. Isn't it funny that the very thing, this life in this world, the very thing that you cannot trust in any way, shape, or form, folks, it's constantly changing. Good grief. We live under the second law of thermodynamics. The law of entropy. Things are not getting better. Nothing gets better. It's going downhill. It's a law, not a theory. And yet we're going to invest in that which is not getting better and is going down the tubes. Am I the only one who sees a problem with that? And we'll go for all of the gusto to get all of these things that we think are going to bring us this satisfaction and meet this need within us like this rich young fella here. And this is what his thought process is. And because he's mixed up, his emotions are next. His thoughts, his feelings, and that's wrong. So based on his feelings, he will make the choices to do these things that will appeal to himself. And then his will falls in category. The scripture says just the opposite. It's the mind, the will, then the emotions within the soul. We have truth that comes into our minds from the Spirit of God. That's the spirit side of us. As God's truth comes into our minds and is processed, as we think through it, it's truth. Then in our minds, you see, we're going to think on that, but then we've got to, according to the scripture, choose to act upon that truth. And then make the feelings adjust to it. Because oftentimes, when truth is revealed, the choices that we have to make in accordance with that truth, having been revealed, are not what we would choose to do. Because it might ask something of us that we would rather not give. So we like the other way around, where the emotions come in. So my thought process and how I feel about that thought process, I will make my choices based on that. If it feels good, do it. There's a problem with that. If it feels good, you should probably not do it. But you see, that's what's happened on. This is who he's having the conversation with within his soul. Within his thought process, his choosing process, his emotional process. All the data is in, wow, I can make a mint off of this. So he has this conversation. So I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Underline many years. That's what we all think, right? All of those young people that I've ministered to their families thought for sure they had many years left to them. What are you going to do with your life, son? Well, I'm just going to hang around for a while. And, you know, I've got my whole life ahead of me. Do you? Do you? Now, some of us do. In fact, many of us do. But there are those that don't. Those kids that just drowned in the river out here thought the same thing, did they not? Our nephew back east that many of you prayed for was just killed on a motorcycle accident last week with his other friend, 17 years old. Do you think when he got on the back of that motorcycle, he didn't think his future was secure? Of course he did. Absolutely, just like you and me. That's what this guy is saying. I've got this all laid up. I'm going to soak off of this for many years to come. I'm sitting in tall cotton, right? I'm going to ride the wave. So here's the thing. Take your ease. Lay back. I love that. You've got the work. The work is done. You're a young man. Put it all away. Go do whatever you want to do, man. You got all these years to do it. Many goods laid up for you. Take your ease. Go ahead and eat whatever you want. Drink whatever you want. I mean, come on, you can afford it. You can do whatever you choose to do. Eat and drink and just have a good old time. Be merry. I mean, just enjoy life as it comes. I mean, after all, you've got many years. Does he? He's a young man. He's got many years. That's how we know one of the reasons he was at least a younger man. But, verse 20, But here's the other side of the coin. Sadly, this is the reality. But God said to him, "Fool." Boy, from a world's perspective, this guy made all the right decisions. He made all the right choices. He made all the right moves. And now, because he's done all of the right things, he has everything he could possibly want. That's the world's perspective. But in contrast, God said, "You are a fool." Why? Because he was concentrated on himself. This night, your life will be required of you. Now, does that mean that God said, "Well, I'm not going to let this guy have all that stuff. I'm going to stop it here"? No. There's an appointment for each of us. Hebrews chapter 9. "And it is appointed unto man once to die." You have an appointment that God has set, whether you like it or not. He's God. And each of us has that day. And if your appointment lasts into the twilight of your years, then praise God that your appointment is, you know, is one that's not coming soon, because there are others whose appointment obviously comes rather early. The issue that this man was facing to death was the allotted time that he had on this life. That's what is really being said here. It's not that God said, "Well, I'm going to take you out of this thing and not going to give you the things that you worked for." That's not what's happening. His days, as we say, were numbered. This is, your time is up right here, right now. This is when your life would be required of you. Even if you hadn't done this, even if you had done the right thing in following the Lord, this was your appointment. This is not an appointment that you can call and change. Though we would certainly like to. And so that's what he's saying. Fool, you completely missed what this was all about. And now it's required of you. Now, he could have taken all those years before and done all of the things that Jesus is going to move into. And we're not going to get to them tonight. This morning, we'll finish this up next week. But this is, you could have done this. You know, let's say the guy was 35. You had 35 years to do what I've asked you to do. To love your neighbor as yourself. To provide for those that are in need. You have this great abundance. Man, you could, do you know how much you could have done for others and still had a real nice place? Nicer than most. But this was all about you. And that's why he deals with him as an individual. Fool, this night, notice that all this time that this guy's put into getting to this point, in a single sweep of time, this night, it's all over. This night, your soul will be required of you. What soul? The one that the guy was having the conversation with before. Who was missing out of that conversation? That's absolutely right. That person's mind and will and emotions had nothing and no interest in the things of God. It was simply talking to himself about all the wonderful things he had. That same soul could have been saying to God, "Thank you for what you've given me. And I will use this to the fullest in whatever way you lead me to do." That's what true wealth is about. That's the kind of wealth that God honors. Because it's others focused, not singular focused or individually focused. This night, your soul. Funny how now God is speaking to that very soul that had no room for him before. Because it was concentrating on making everything just right. So you could just hang out, eat, drink, and be merry. This night, your soul will be required of you. In other words, you're going to have to give account. You're going to stand before me as the judge. Now here, God does arbitrate. Not man to man. No, no. This is an issue between this man and God. So God will judge this. I gave you all of these years. I showed you everything you needed to know to be the kind of man that I've asked you to be, so that you could be in a position to bless everyone else, including yourself. And you twittered it away. I don't mean Twitter now, okay? I mean, you threw it away. There we go. We'll just throw that. Your life will be required of you. Then, whose will those things be? All that time you spent, you don't get to spend a cent. You don't get to enjoy one second of. It's all left. Well, that's okay, Rick. I'm going to leave it to my family. You know what happens when we leave it to our family for the most part? They want to kill each other to decide who gets what, right? Unless, of course, you're like the guy in the commercial that if you're left the, you know, that, what's that satellite thing with those, you know, 900 channels of movies and, you know. The world mocks, even the world realizes the stupidity of this. There's all of these stories out there, even the world. This guy's done this for his family, but his family's a bunch of snakes, man. Watch Dallas. Anyway. So tonight your life is required of you, and all that time you spend acquiring these things, you're going to get none of it. Then whose things will those be which you, notice this, which you have provided? You thought you were providing for yourself. Eat, drink, and be merry, man. Hang out. That's what you thought. But the reality is all that stuff that you were storing up, that you did, you've now provided to others. And you know the sad situation is probably going to come out of this? The chances are very high that they will be just like you. Just as self-centered, just as selfish, just as self-gratifying. That's the problem. Verse 21, so is he who lays up treasure for himself. I want my inheritance, Lord. Give me my inheritance. Well, let me tell you a story here. See? Careful. Careful about this. You better be on your guard and you better watch, because these riches will snag you. They'll get your focus where it never should have been. And all of us are subject to it. All of us. That's why he said, beware. Be on our guard. Stay alert. Because all of those who lay up treasure for ourselves are not rich towards God, no matter what we think. And then he goes into this next part of this, and we'll just touch on this, and then we'll close it down. Then he said to the disciples, listen, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life. We always throw this around, don't we? Come on, man, don't worry, don't worry. And it's such an easy thing to say, isn't it? But it's the most difficult thing to do, isn't it? To not worry. To just rest in who God is. Therefore, do not worry about your life. He's continuing on here. Notice this about what you will eat. Remember, eat, drink, and be merry. I've done all of this stuff. Stop worrying about that. Just stop. Don't worry about what you're going to eat, nor about your body, what you're going to put on. Because life is more than food. Oh, man. That can't be right. Surely he didn't mean that. Man, I read that and I'm like, oh, Lord. I thought life was food. Food was life. No, it's not. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. In other words, eternity is at stake. He's going to go on to say, which we'll talk about next time, that the reality of this is how you're going to recognize this is based on where your heart is, the inner person, and that includes the soul. That part of us that is intangible. And he said, wherever that part of you is, or wherever your treasure is, that's where that part of you is going to be. And sadly, that is evident to everybody else. The thing that we pursue in this life, or maybe back up, thing or things, reveals the heart. When more time is spent doing all of these other things, by far, than it is for doing anything for God, you have a problem. Your heart is not where it should be. Fool. See, that's what's going on here. Isn't it amazing how we always will look and strive to get this, to get this position, to get that possession, to get whatever it is. And we'll work our whole lives towards a very good retirement. and a 401k program so that we can just rest in our senior years. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. But we put all of our efforts into this thing that no matter how big or fancy it's going to be, make no mistake about it, Hugh Hefner isn't taking anything with him when he goes. Neither is Donald Trump or anyone else. Gates, what's the dude did with Apple? Job, whatever, you get the Jobs. These guys were beyond comprehension rich. Where are they now? Well, some of them are still here, but they're soon going to be finding out. We spend all of our lives working towards these very things, only to find that they don't do anything in the end. It's not where happiness is found. It's not. It isn't in your job. Yeah, you can find contentment there and being satisfied in what God has provided for you. But that isn't where your hope is. Or that thing that you just worked and worked and worked to get. Only to get it and find, wow, now that I got it, it's really not that big a deal. You know? And then we could go on and on. You get the idea. But we'll spend all of this time spinning our wheels trying to get up that hill. Because everybody knows that's where you should be, is up on the hill overlooking everything else. So we strive for that. And I'm talking about Christians here. And we give this minimal, I don't even know if minimal is exactly right. It probably is even less than that. We make this pseudo effort to be what our God, we know our God has asked us to be. And we fill it in with 1,000 different reasons why that is the case. Well, that's what he's talking about here. Where your heart is, or where your treasure is, sorry, that's where your heart is going to be. So the question then is for us as we leave today, where is your treasure? It's easy to see because it's the thing you spend all your time going after. That's where your heart is. And at some point, for each of us, at that appointed time, whatever this is will be required of us. And just like this guy and these other fellows that we, from our time that we just talked about, we're all going to give an account of the time that God has given us. We know, or at least I hope we know, geez, I pray we know, that you're not going to find joy and contentment in anything in this life. You're not. It's not going to happen. It'll be temporal. I mean, you may think so, but it's not. It's not. So what we need to do is say, okay, look, here's the reality is, what am I going to do about this? Put ourselves in the position to use that which God has blessed us with to do whatever it is that he's asked us to do, to go wherever it is he's asked us to go, to reach out and help in whatever way he's asked us to do. These are the things that are important in life. Those things, when you take them into the next life, those things are the things that count for eternity. That's the reality of it. Because that heart that has its treasure in heaven is the heart that will do heavenly things. As uncomfortable and challenging as they may be. Amen? All right, let's pray.